All right, it's unbelievable, but apparently the first podcast went okay, so they let us have a second guest. And we are honored and delighted to bring in Mike Commodore, who used to be a Red Wing, played in the NHL for a very long time, won a Stanley Cup with Carolina, and finished his career in Tampa Bay. What's going on, Mike?
Not a whole lot. Just getting off the golf course. It's actually really nice and warm here in Calgary. There's no snow, which is nice. All is well. All is well.
We were talking to you before. You just shot a 75, and you're upset about that. You understand that makes people that makes me infuriated. I mean, I'm lucky to break 100.
Wow. And, yes, I totally get it. Golf is a very hard game. But when you retire at 34 years old, you got literally nothing to do, no kids, no wife barking at you for the golf course. I spent a lot of time on the golf course. The 75 overall was a pretty good number for me. But it could have been way better, and I was just three-putting everywhere at the end, and maybe the pressure got to me. Can't handle it.
A 75 from how many yards?
75 from, it was a Calgary Flames alumni thing. It was 75 from 6,800 yards, which is a little bit short. If it was me, I'd go a little bit back just because we're in Calgary, and the elevation's up there a little bit.
Wow.
So, yeah, it wasn't the yardage. It was more the chipping and putting. Yeah. Which is a problem for a lot of golfers.
You hockey players kill the ball, too.
Yeah, most guys can usually hit it. Yeah, no doubt about it. I've been fortunate enough to go on a bunch of golf trips with a lot of Red Wings guys, actually, over the last, it'd be 7 or 8 years now, the Cleary-Horkoff Invitational. And most guys can definitely, I think it's the hand-eye coordination. The swing path might not be awesome, but they can definitely hit it and make good contact. So I think it translates fairly well, at least in the beginning anyway.
So is it true that you become a pro hockey player to golf as much as you can?
I mean, I never planned on being a pro hockey player, but once that actually worked out, it was awesome that I could golf all the time. I played baseball all the time as a kid, and then when I went to college, I'm like, well, I'm just going to focus on hockey. That's what I'm getting a scholarship for. So the baseball was done, and then it's like, well, I got a bunch of time in the summers now, and you end up got to find something to do. So ended up golfing a little bit in college, and then had no money in college, so didn't really golf all that much. And then once it was professional hockey, you have a little more money, or spending money or whatever, free money, whatever you want to, not free money, but I forget what the saying is, but money that's available, dispensable income.
There it
disposable
is.
Income, that's what it is. Spend it on the golf course.
At what point in your life growing up did you realize that you were better than 99% of hockey players? Because I have to imagine there was a point in time in your life that you're like, wow, I'm this much better than everybody else that I'm playing. There had to have been that point.
You know what? It was, being completely honest, I was very average, I would say, right through bantam, right through midget. I mean, I was a defensive defenseman that wasn't a great skater. I was a pretty good athlete. Like, I was, compared to my peers, I was way better at baseball. And don't get me wrong, I'm not sitting here in Southern California. I wasn't playing baseball there. I was playing baseball in Alberta. But there's some decent baseball up here for sure. I really didn't. You know what? It never really dawned on me that professional hockey or that I was good at hockey. And I swear to God, it never dawned on me until about halfway through my sophomore year at the University of North Dakota. So I would have been 18 years old, and I was rated in like the NHL Central Scouting, and I was rated somewhere like in the, for North American skaters, like 20 something or something like that. Once I saw that, I was like, wow, really? And then I got drafted in the second round. And then once I got drafted, then I was like, oh, maybe I can make a career of this. And then I went from there. Because I never really, I guess I was pretty good defensively, but I would never say I was, head and shoulders above people I was playing against.
I'm like, so take me through it. You win a Stanley Cup with Carolina in 2006, right? Is that the best feeling of your hockey career? Or was it you making your NHL debut? Or was it you signing a massive deal with the Columbus Blue Jackets? Like, what is the greatest feeling of Mike Commodore's very long hockey career?
Oh, God, that's a great way to put that question. I mean, the easy answer is to obviously say that winning the Stanley Cup was the greatest moment. That is the easy answer, and that's probably the right answer. I guess I would have to go with that.
But we don't need right.
I mean, you know, it's hard. Nobody has words for it. It's like, wow, I can't believe this is happening. You know, you grow up watching it. Everybody knows what the Stanley Cup is. Oh, my God, I'm on the ice. Oh, my God, it's over my head. But you can't really believe it's happening. Then you get crushed all summer, and you're the man all summer. I mean, it is a great – it was awesome. But it was also very awesome when I got a phone call on July 1st saying that I just signed a five-year deal, or that this was available to me, a five-year deal for $3.75 million a year. I was like, you got to be kidding me. I'm like, I didn't even think it was going to be half that. Like, I had no idea what was coming. So that was a great feeling, too. I guess different feelings. Nobody's ever really put it that way. That's a tough one to answer. I'm going to go... The Stanley Cup is definitely ahead with the July 1st of 2008 right behind it.
But be honest with me. When you find out you're signing a five-year deal with the Blue Jackets worth, what, almost $19 million, you said it yourself, no wife, no kids. What are you doing? Like, how much fun is that?
Yeah, I mean, as soon as I found out, I was actually living in San Diego at the time, so I was training down there, and then I would buzz up to Calgary once August 1st hits, and then I would skate and stuff up here, because that's where I'm at right now, because there isn't a whole lot of ice in San Diego, or if there was, I didn't know where it was. As soon as to run through the whole thing quickly, you know, I knew I was one of the hotter commodities as far as D-men go in the summer of 2008. Agent called. He's like, hey, you know, let's have some fun tomorrow. Good luck. I'm like, yeah, thanks. He called like 10, 15 minutes into free agency. And he's like, hey, he goes, we got some teams interested. I'm like, okay, good. And so there was, you know, a couple teams that were interested, another one. And so first was like, well, we got a five-year deal. I'm like, 5 years? He's like, yeah, 5 years. So I'm like, okay. I'm like, well, what's the number? He's like, well, take a guess. I'm like, ow. I'm like, I don't even want to guess. I'm like, two? Maybe just the first. Tell me the first number's a two. He's like, what if I told you the first number's a three?
Ooh.
I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And so we kind of went from there. As soon as I knew it, there was kind of two teams that were kind of in the mix. Well, I could say it now. It was Columbus and then Atlanta. So Atlanta also wanted me. But I'd played most of my NHL games in Carolina. And so back then you used to play 12 games against your division. And so I'd gone in and played against Atlanta all the time. And nothing against the city of Atlanta. I had a good time there. But playing hockey in Atlanta as a visitor sucks. There's nobody in the rink. Nobody cares. I hated going there. So I actually, and this is going to sound stupid, but I actually could have gotten more money from Atlanta, but I took a little bit less to go to Columbus because I wanted nothing to do with Atlanta.
No
now,
shit.
Looking back on how things all turned out, I had a blast in Columbus, but Scott Arneil came in, and that was the door for me halfway through my contract. If I would have known that the Atlanta was going to be there for a bit, then go to Winnipeg, I mean, then maybe I would have taken the most cash possible. But, that was basically how it worked out.
So I'm always curious. When I get an extra $3 in my paycheck, that money's instantly gone. I know what I'm going to spend it on. When you get that call, do you go get fitted for a new set of clubs? Do you buy a car? Do you sit on it? What do you do? Is there anything that you buy?
You know what? I didn't. I didn't really. You know what I did? As soon as I knew I was actually to finish. Yeah, I never even really answered the question. As soon as I knew it was happening, I called a couple of my buddies from home. There was, I think, four of them. I think, I don't know. It was kind of a blurry couple days.
Right.
And I'm like, hey, July 4th is coming up. It's Independence Day. More importantly, right now for us, I'm about to sign a 5-year deal. I'm getting you guys flights. Get down here. We're going to get after it for 3 or 4 days.
Ah.
So they flew down and we floored it. I took care of everything. My first interview as a Columbus Blue Jacket, I shouldn't have set it up. I should have known better because it was, I'm on Pacific time, Columbus. It was like a 9 o'clock interview in Columbus, which was 6 o'clock in San Diego, 6 o'clock in the morning. And yeah, that was not a good idea. I was on with Kirk Herbstreit. And I remember sitting there talking, and my buddy, who I thought was passed out on the couch, he was like, after about 5 minutes, he goes, he said he had his eyes closed. He goes, less is more, Mike. less is more. I'm like, oh my God, I'm talking too much and I'm repeating myself because I'm loaded. So then I kind of shortened it up from there. And so that's what I did. I didn't buy anything crazy. I never really did that, to be honest.
Just sounds like you had a crazy good time. That's all.
It was fun. Yeah, we had a good time.
Oh, man.
So, Mike, you were in Detroit for all of 17 games. You came here after Columbus, bought you out, right? And they gave you, $1 million for 1 year?
Yep.
And just do a little word association with me. When I say Mike Babcock, what goes through your head?
Well, how much am I? What's the language like on this?
Dude, swear. Go for it.
NSFW.
Whatever.
Yep.
When I hear Mike Babcock, the first thing that comes to my mind is a piece of shit.
So where did it start? I mean, so we follow, just a little background. If you follow Mike Commodore on Twitter, he's fucking awesome. And he breaks stories. And more than anything, you trash Babcock, which I love, too, because I wasn't a big fan of Babcock myself. So where did it start? Because of all the stuff you've done, you are known for hating Babcock.
I am. Yeah, I am. I know. I get that a lot. That wasn't the plan when it started. And to be honest, when I start, I'm not going to name any names because if guys want to say something, let's just say this. Everybody that I know that's ran into Mike Babcock that has had the misfortune of either playing for him or dealing with him or being at Joe Louis Arena back in the day with him hates his guts. The guy is a piece of shit that treats people terribly. His ego, I haven't met him since he signed that deal in Toronto. So I can't even imagine how big his fucking ego is now, but he is a piece of shit. He treats people terribly. I went on a tangent there. What was the?
No, it was word association, but I have a question about that, about him treating people like shit. So I once heard a saying for coaching, and I think it was maybe Scotty Bowman that it was attached to, where he said something along the lines of, you'll hate me 364 days of the year, but on day 365, when we're raising the Stanley Cup, that will all go away. That was not the case with him.
No, and you know what? What kind of gets sidetracked a little bit. It's like, look, I don't hate the guy because he was – well, to be honest, I don't even know because I played 17 fucking games for him, but I wasn't even really playing. Like, I was there, but I wasn't. But it's not like he was like, oh, he's a tough coach and he's like hard on – I played for coaches that were hard on me. I actually enjoyed that. I had no problems with that. If it has nothing to do with that, I hate that guy. First off, he's full of shit. He's a fucking liar. He's a liar. He's selfish. His arrogance is off the charts. It's not like, oh, he's tough on me on the ice and, oh, you know, he wants more out of me. It's not that. It's like, this guy's a fucking scumbag who all he wants he thinks everything is about him. His favorite time of the day is when the media comes rolling in there. He will never miss a fucking press conference because he thinks everybody now in Toronto is showing up. Oh, it's about me. They're not here to watch the players. They're here to watch me. I'm the man. And his ego, and it's really, honestly, the easiest way to put it is how he treats people. If he doesn't think that you can do something for him, he will treat you like a piece of shit. And to get back to the earlier question, where it started, I had the misfortune of briefly running into, so to sum the story up, because nobody's going to care, but after my second year in New Jersey, my second year pro, I was in New Jersey and Albany. I got traded to Anaheim, and it was his first year coming up and being the head coach for the Anaheim Mighty Ducks. So in the summer, he calls me, hey, make sure you show up in shape. I'm like, yeah, sounds good. I don't know who Mike Babcock is. I've never heard of him. I've never had a run-in with him. Nothing. There's no previous history whatsoever. So I show up to camp. Long story short, I fight everybody in camp. I'm supposed to play like I'm penciled in, but I don't take it for granted because I'm like, look, I've been in the minors just as much as I've been in the NHL to this point. Nothing is for sure. So anyways, he has somebody else he wants to play, sends me down to the minors, carves me in the paper, says I showed up out of shape, which I swear to God, I never showed up out of shape because I wasn't talented enough to do it. If I would have showed up out of shape, actually done that, I would have been in the East Coast League and done in like 2 years. I had to show up in good shape. So anyways, we had a little bit of a thing there. He carved me in the paper. Now my reputation is I never was able to get rid of that. Like, oh, the guy doesn't work out because he went to the fucking paper and said that. I'm like, I read it. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? So anyways, there's more to it that happened. I spent all the year in Cincinnati there until Calgary traded for me. So I didn't like him then, carved him in the paper once I got to Columbus. And then I ended up signing in Detroit, which is a whole nother story.
So after he goes to the media, do you approach him and say, "What's up, man? Like, I'll do any conditioning test you want. I don't get it," or do you just let it roll off?
So, well, when he went to the media in Anaheim, I was in Cincinnati. And then I read it. I'm like, you got to be fucking kidding me. So that was after camp. And he's like, oh, he doesn't care. I'm like, I fought everybody in camp. How do I not care? I don't understand this. And then I got called up. This is like the biggest. So Anaheim was actually playing Columbus. I was in Cincinnati. And they called me up and did a fat test on me. So I'm not even playing the game. They call me up for the day, which is nice because you get a day's pay. So I guess I appreciate that looking back. But so they do a fat test, the pinch test. So for anybody that's done that test, it's very subjective. I mean, you can make somebody, you know, I guess if you, you know, somebody that you put on the front of a magazine that's ripped out of their mind, you can make them be like 5% body fat on 3 points. You just grab the points that where there's a little bit of extra skin. So anyways, he does a 3-point. I've been playing 3-3 and 4-4 or 4-5 nights the whole first half of the year. I'm in great shape. I've been playing a ton. I'm the exact same body weight, if not lighter, than I was in training camp. They do this fat test, and I was always like around 10-11% body fat in training camp and throughout the year. They do this fat test, and I'm 22% body fat. I'm like, and it was a brand new strength coach. He's like, hey, I got to fire this in. I go, well, look, I'm the exact same weight I was in training camp. I've been playing hockey games. I've been skating. I play all the time. I'm like, I don't understand how this isn't possible. And he's like, I got to hand it in. So hands it in to Babs. Babs waits, gives it to me in front of the team. I don't know any of these guys. So anyways, I told him to go fuck himself. I'm like, you know what? Fuck you. I'm like, your test is fucked. I'm like, let's go do a real test. Do more than 3 points. I'm not fucking 22% body fat. Fuck you. And that was when I was done in Anaheim. And anyways.
Okay, so Mike.
Calgary traded for me.
So Calgary trades for you. You end up eventually in Columbus. Columbus buys you out. You're a free agent. And you get an offer from Detroit. Like, why the fuck do you go to Detroit?
Great question. One of the biggest regrets of my career. So what I was thinking there was, so I get bought out on June 30th, whatever it is, the last day of June. And my agent is like, hey, look, you're getting bought out. I'm like, no shit. And he's like, you know, maybe we'll get an offer in August. I'm like, okay, sounds good. Next day, 9 a.m. in Kelowna, I'm on Pacific time again. Phone rings, it's my agent. I'm like, it's 9:05. Free agency just started. I just got it bought out. I was high on the totem pole in 2008. Now I'm right near the bottom. I'm not expecting anything. I'm hoping to get something. Calls me 5 minutes into free agency. He's like, hey, I got a contract offer for you. I'm like, really? I'm like, what the fuck is it? I'm like, what is a fucking East Coast League team calling? Like, who the fuck is calling me on July 1st? And he's like, Detroit. I'm like, what? I'm like, what's the deal? He's like, well, 1 year, $1 million. I'm like, there's no fucking way I'm taking that. I'm not going to Detroit. So I had a different agent. My agent didn't know about this. So the backstory was I had played in Ken Holland's golf tournament that he has every year in Vernon. And I got along really well with Ken. I really like Ken. I still like Ken. I don't talk to him anymore, but I do like Ken. I think he's a good guy. And so Ken liked me. So anyways, back to the present tense. 1 year, $1 million Detroit. I'm like, I'm not fucking going there. My gut is screaming. The only reason why Babs wants me there is to fucking end my career. This is it. You get bought out, you're lucky to get one more chance, if you're lucky. If you get one more shot at it, and if that doesn't work out, I don't care who you are, you're done. That's it. And I knew that. So I'm like, hey, I go, I'm not fucking going there. He's like, well, he goes, well, what do you want me to tell him? I'm like, well, I don't know. Just tell him we'll get back to him. He's like, well, Mike, here's the deal. You have 15 minutes to make up your mind. Either you're in or you're out. If it's after 15 minutes, that contract's off the table. I'm like, you got to be fucking kidding me. I'm like, 15 minutes, free agency just started. Nobody else, even if another team like kind of likes me, they're not even thinking about calling me for like 2 weeks.
Yeah, they don't even let you flirt with someone, huh?
No, nothing. So I'm like, holy fuck. I'm like, I'll call you back. So I hang up the phone. I call Ken Holland. I'm like, Ken, I would love to play for you. I would love to play in Detroit. I always enjoyed going in, even when we got our asses kicked going in there. I love the city. I think Joe Louis is awesome. I would love to play there. You always make the playoffs. I'm like, I would love to play for you. But I'm like, you know what I think of Mike Babcock. We had beers at your golf tournament. and I was fucking ripping on him. I'm like, you know what I think of him. I'm like, does he want me on the team or not? Yeah, he does. That's what Ken says. I'm like, are you sure? He's like, yeah. I'm like, give me his phone number. So he gives me his cell. I call that piece of shit. Now I got like 10 minutes left. He's like, oh, hey. He's like, oh, call me. I'm like looking at my phone. I'm like, don't call. I didn't say this, but I'm like, don't call me. Call me, you piece of shit. We're not friends. And I'm like, Mike, please be honest with me. Do you want me on your hockey team or not? If you don't, if you're just getting me in here because you want to fuck me over, you want to end my career, please be honest with me. I just won't sign. I won't say anything. No hard feelings. But I know this is my last chance. I need to know wherever I go, I'm going to get an opportunity. Yeah. We need you. We need you. And this time they hadn't signed Ian White yet. So there was no right-handed defenseman on the decor. He's like, yeah. I want you. We need a physical presence. We need a right-handed shot. Nick likes playing with a right-handed shot defenseman, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, Mike, please. I understand this is my last chance. Please be honest with me. Ask him again. Do you want me on your team? Am I going to get a decent opportunity? I'm not talking about power play time or any of that shit. I knew I could still play. I'm like, I just need an opportunity. I don't need to get fucked right away. He goes, no, you're going to get an opportunity. I want you on my team. Hang up the phone, call my agent. He's like, well, what do you think? I'm like, this guy's going to fuck me. Like, he's going to fuck me for sure. He's like, well, what did he say? So he's like, oh, he said Nick. And he's like, well, Detroit, you're going to make the playoffs. You're going to get an opportunity. You know, I think you should take him at his word. And then I'm like thinking, I'm like, wow, I'm like, I get to play with Nick Lidstrom. Like, literally, all I would have to do is be fucking go D-to-D all year, and that'd be 35, 40 points. I'm back, maybe another five-year deal. I'm rolling again. That's what's going through my head. So I end up sitting there. I got a couple minutes left. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to take this guy at his word, and I'm going to say yes. I'm going to sign there. I mean, I would love to play in Detroit. So I sign, and then fucking scratched, and a complete disaster. Career over.
So I completely understand why your disdain for this man. I'm just trying to put the puzzle together and figure out why he doesn't like you. Like, I don't under, like, did you go out with a girl that he liked or something?
No.
Did you have better hair than him and he was pissed off about that? Like, I'm trying to figure it out because there's definitely something there that pissed him off and I can't figure out.
He does have some pretty nice hair. I mean, let's be honest.
I mean, my hair is way better than his. For sure.
But is there something that you're thinking, like, this dude just hates me because of this, that maybe it happened?
I've thought about it. I haven't thought about it in a while. But I thought about it, like, in Anaheim. I'm like, man, why the fuck does this guy fucking hate me? Like, I don't know him. I don't know any of his friends. I don't have anything to do. I'm not from the same area that he's from. I have nothing to do with this guy. I have no idea why this guy doesn't like me or whatever. And I really, to be honest, I have no idea. To be honest, I think he just, he got me in Detroit the second time just to fucking end my career. That was blatantly obvious. But honestly, I think he just likes fucking people over, to be honest.
Well, Mike, how did it end then?
One story that kind of comes to mind that I've told on other podcasts is like the Mike Modano story, where Mike Modano, a first ballot Hall of Famer, a career like second to none, basically. You look at his games played was 1,499 games played. His last season was in Detroit. Mike Babcock scratched him like game 76 or 77 just so he didn't get to 1,500. I mean, that's what kind of person this fucking guy is. Like, most coaches would have been like, in Mike, and I wish Mike, and I like Mike, he's a good guy. Like, I wish he would go off and fucking carve this. I wish way more people would because I know how a lot of them feel, all of them feel. But it's like most coaches would go out of their way. Like if a guy had a broken leg and you're one game away, it's game 76, and if you play the rest of them, you're going to get to 1,500. It'd be like, hey, look, I don't care if your leg's broken. You're putting your shit on, and you're going to get on the ice, and your blades are going to touch the ice for 2 seconds, and then you're going to get off. As long as your skates touch the ice, that's considered a game played. I'm getting you to 1,500, where he's the exact opposite. He's a piece of shit.
That's wild to me. Have you ever talked to Modano about that? Been like, dude, why didn't you just like step up and say, I'm playing? I mean, at that point in time, he was, like you said, the tail end of his career. Everybody knew who he was. He's from here locally. Like, get it done.
Yeah. No, I mean, I went on a golf trip with Mike Modano, like one of the Cleary Horkoff Invitational, I want to say 5 years ago now. And I had no idea. And he told the story just like kind of a little bit how it happened. Now, it's a little bit foggy because we were boozing.
Right.
But he kind of said the story, and I'm like, dude, I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm like, get on the podcast or the radio and carve this motherfucker. You're Mike Modano. Like, when I say something, it's whatever. It's some run-of-the-mill defenseman that hung around for a while, scored 20 goals over the course of 14. Nobody gives a shit. You're Mike Modano. Like, go on there and fucking carve him. Like, people will listen when you say something, but it's just not in his personality, I guess.
And Mike, so how did it end? So you played 17 games in Detroit. You're scratched a ton of the games, right? How does it come to an end? And then you go to Tampa the same year, and then you're done, right? I mean, you played like 17, 18 games there, then it's over.
So how it worked out was I knew things. So coming out of training camp, we played Chicago, there was probably a week left in training camp, and I it was the only time I've ever had any kind of little knee issue. I tweaked my knee. I was out for like a week. So the regular season started, and I was like legitimately like I wasn't healthy. So I was out for like the first two games. So I'm like, yeah, okay, obviously that's a scratch. I can't play. And then I'm ready to go. Like, it wasn't a big deal, not a big knee injury whatsoever. It was nothing. So I think that year we started like 0-5, lost our first five games. So I'm sitting there, and it's like, okay, scratched on game three, scratched on game four, scratched on game five. And now I'm like, okay. I'm like, it's not like if the team's winning, I totally get it. Don't change the lineup, no problem. It's like, we're losing. I'm ready to go. Where's this opportunity? But I don't panic. I go for like another week. Now I've been scratched like 10, 12 games in a row, whatever it is. Now we're getting towards the end of October. And I was like, I was a miserable person. I was living downtown Detroit. I lived above the West in there because I'm like, you know what? I need to take this seriously. I want to be close to the ring. I was the only guy downtown. I didn't know nobody lived downtown until I got there and rented the place. I was literally the only person downtown. And I actually really enjoyed it. But the main reason why I was down there was like, look, I'm going to be the first person to press. I need to, this is for real. This is my last chance. So I'm like, I want to be as close to Joe Louis as I possibly can. Scratch, scratch, scratch. I'm like, holy fuck. So for like 3 weeks, I was miserable. I'm like, this motherfucker, it's happening. And I just got bought out. I have zero leverage. So it's like, what am I going to say? Like, what am I going to go to the media and say? Nobody gives a shit. I'm like, fuck, I just got to kind of ride this out is what I was thinking. So for the first like three weeks, I'd say I was like, I was miserable. I was pissed off. I'm like, I knew it. I'd call my agent. I'd light him up. I'm like, I fucking told you this was going to happen. And after that, I'm like, you know what? I'm like, this guy isn't going to dictate how I live my life. I'm like, fuck him. He doesn't want to play me. Fine. Don't play me. I'm going to come to the rink. I'm going to run the stairs. I'm going to practice as hard as he'll let me because he always blew drills down when it was my turn. I'm going to go one-on-one against Pav. He likes doing that in the neutral zone along the board. I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to plan the parties. I'm going to be a good guy to be around, and I'm going to have fun. So that's what I ended up doing. And so that went through. There was actually, I did get to play one game. I think it was in November. So we were on a road trip, and Ian White got hit in the face with a puck or something. And because Babs was, like, calling up Brendan Smith. He was calling people up to keep me scratched. Like, it was like, you're not playing. I'm calling guys up from the minors. I'm like, holy, now I know. I'm like, you got to be fucking kidding me. So anyways, we're going to St. Louis. Ian took a puck in the mouth, and I'm like, okay, this is my chance. He doesn't have time to call anybody up. They can't get anybody there in time. I have to play. So I dress, play. First period, I think I played maybe one shift towards the end of the first, something like that. Second period, no shifts whatsoever. I'm just sitting there. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? This is my big chance. I've been on the ice for 45 seconds. So I'm sitting there. I'm like the grocery stick in the middle. I'm like, I literally like loosened my skates up a little bit because my feet were fucking killing me. And it's like 2 minutes left in the third period. Game's tied. The game was tied or we were either up by one. I can't remember. And it's a line change, kind of scrambly. The D coach, Billy Babcock Peters, panics. He's like, Mike, go. I turn around. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? He's like, go. So I jump over the boards. I trip over my own feet. I fall flat on my face. I get up. I'm right on our blue line, and Alex Steen is coming with, like, a full head of steam. I'm like, oh, my God. I haven't done shit for, like, 2 hours. So I'm like, strong side post. So I back up, keep him to the outside. He goes around behind the net. Nicholas Cronwall was out there, so my D partner is supposed to pick him up on the other side of the net. I'm not supposed to chase him everywhere. I don't know what Nicholas was doing, but he didn't see him. He kind of had his head up his ass or whatever was happening. And so he doesn't pick him up, so I'm like, oh, shit. So I skate over there, and he's now in the corner. And I'm like, I am going to put this guy into the 10th row. So I go to hit him. He stops and goes way. I go to turn, trip over my own feet again, head first into the boards, pick myself up, go back to the front of the net. Steen, like, took it to the net and got a shot on Jimmy. And somehow the puck ended up on my stick, and I'm going in behind the net. I'm like, holy shit. So I'm like, if I don't see somebody in the middle or somebody in the boards, I'm chipping this thing off the glass, and I'm getting the fuck off the ice. I have no business being out here. So I take a look. Nobody in the middle, nobody on the boards. Just go to chip it out. There's somebody kind of on me, but not really. As soon as I go to chip it out, the puck bounces, and I shoot it like 20 rows into the stands, delay a game penalty. And I'm like, you got to be fucking kidding me. So I actually turned away from the bench because, I mean, it's to the point where I'm like, I got to laugh about this. This is a joke. So I ended up going in. They didn't score. I can't remember who won the game, but they didn't score while I was in the penalty box. And then I was obviously scratched again. And that went right through, or right till right after, or the day before Christmas, Ken Holland forced Ken Holland forced Mike Babcock to play me in Calgary right before Christmas. And then I went and played most of January. And then that was it.
No kidding. So just to sum it up, when you see Mike Babcock and the Maple Leafs versus the Bruins in Game 7 in the first round, I mean, like when you see Toronto lose that game because Babcock obviously can't win a playoff series in Toronto, are you like sexually excited? Like is the mood just like unfucking believable?
To be honest, the biggest reason, well, I'm back in Calgary. I've been here for a couple years now. I was in Phoenix before. Like, I can't. And the worst thing for people that obviously in Detroit that don't live up here, you can't get away from that fucking guy here. Like, he's on TV every fucking day because he's the head coach of the league. So every day I got to see this piece of shit, I'm like, fuck you. But as far as the games go, I can't even watch them. So game seven, I can't watch any Leafs game. I'm nothing to do with the Leafs. It's because of him. And the game seven, I'm like, oh my God, I didn't, because it seemed like every time I would look at my phone, like, the Leafs would score three goals or something like that. So I didn't check my phone. I stayed away from all kinds of TV and I didn't look at all. And then I went over to James Neal's house after because he's like, hey, come over. They had just lost out. And I'm like, hey, dude, I go, I know you're watching the game, but I'm like, I can't watch. I'm like, I can't. It's too much for me. And he's like, no, the game's over. I'm like, don't tell me anything. So I walked into his place. I'm like, please tell me what I want to fucking hear. He's like, yeah, they lost 5-1 or whatever the score was. And I was, yeah. I mean, there were a bunch of guys around, so I didn't get too sexually aroused, but I was close to it.
I'm going
to
ask you a hypothetical here. Let's say you're playing in a golf tournament next month, and they randomly team you up with Mike Babcock. What would transpire?
We're not even making it off the first tee.
Like, are you just waiting to see him one time again?
You know what? I hope I never see that guy for the rest of my life. That would be a good thing. He is not a person I want anybody that I like to meet. He is a scumbag. But if that did happen, I mean, sooner or later, I guess it could happen where we're at a charity event or something. You know what? I don't know what I would do. I would have a very hard time keeping it together. And for sure, he would say something. Like, with his ego, he would definitely say something, and to be honest, I would fly off the fucking handle. I would have no control. Like, no control. Like, I'm not saying I'm the toughest guy in the world, but I'm telling you right now, I will kick the shit out of that guy.
So if he threw out a, hey, commie, how's it going over there, eh? You wouldn't be having that one, huh?
It would be a solid fuck you or go fuck yourself coming right back immediately. And keep my golf bag away from me because I'd probably grab a club and try and take his head off.
Yeah, you don't want to go to jail, right?
No, that's the only thing. Like, if I could legitimately hurt him and get away with it, then I would consider doing it. But yeah, no, I don't. It's not worth jail time, so no. It would be a potential fist fight for sure. I'd let him get the first one in just so I don't get in trouble, and then it's on.
I kind of want to circle back to something that you were mentioning about how Ken Holland called you and brought you here and everything, and you like Ken Holland. Around here, he gets a lot of flack. It's a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately type deal. And before Yzerman took over the job here in Detroit, people wanted Ken Holland gone so fast. As a former player who has played under him, knows him personally, knows the game of hockey better than Joe Schmo living in Allen Park, what do you think about Ken Holland as a general manager?
You know what? I mean, I get where people are coming from. I mean, at the end of the day, the general manager is only as good as your players, right? And he had some great players, and he had some great scouting. But, hey, he had to hire these guys, and look, you had Nick Lidstrom among other, I mean, Hall of Famers left and right. So he had good teams. So I get that. But at the end of the day, I mean, I think his record speaks for itself. I mean, he's been very, very successful, a run of how many years making the playoffs and however many cups. So I think that's important. I understand why, you know, I keep up a little bit with the Wings. You know, I understand there's some contracts that you're probably, you know, the fans are probably looking at being like, okay, seriously, like, why did he sign him to that? I get that. But I think, at least for me, at the end of the day, his track record speaks for itself. And more importantly to me, well, I shouldn't say more importantly, but equally as important, Ken is a good guy. He's a really good guy. So I think that's a good hire by Edmonton. We'll see how it works out. Who knows? But, yeah, I see where the fans are coming from. But you know what? I would say cut them a little bit of slack. You guys had a lot of really, really good years there. You should enjoy that and not focus on the last few years.
So what do you think about Stevie there, Mike? I mean, obviously, you say you follow the Wings a little bit. They're still in a rebuild. How long do you think this is going to take? And I think fans just are so excited to have Yzerman that they're automatically like, okay, this thing's going to be turned around. And while there's a core here, you know, it still might take a couple more years, don't you think? Or what are your general thoughts there?
Yeah, no, I think, well, first off, I think Steve Yzerman's the man. I can't say enough great things about him. I played against him a little bit as a player. I had the opportunity. He gave me the opportunity to play for him. My only time that I ever had a sniff at, well, the only time I ever played for Team Canada was in the World Championships. I was lucky to be there, and Steve gave me that opportunity. So I'm very thankful for that. And I think he's a great dude. I've ended up hanging out with him a few times. I think Steve Yzerman is the man, period. And I think the Detroit fans should be excited on a lot of levels. I mean, he's done a very good job in Tampa. Hopefully that translates to Detroit, and I don't see any reason why that won't. I wouldn't be in a big rush about it. Like, I don't think, being totally honest, I couldn't name the prospects top to bottom in the Red Wings organization, so I have no idea what's coming up. But I would give it some time. I mean, if it doesn't happen in the first couple years or whatever, I wouldn't panic, and it won't be for lack of trying and for lack of knowledge. It'll just be he needs to get some players and the right players in the right mix. I think Detroit's in good hands, which is great for the league.
I got to know, last one for me. You played with Nick Lidstrom for 17 games. In fact, you know, my Babcock said you were going to be his defensive pair partner, but obviously that never happened. But
no.
I went back to look. The year you played was his last. The Wings ended up losing in 5 to the Preds, and he retires. Did you have any inclination that Nick was going to call it quits after that year? And just talk about, I mean, that guy was a freak, wasn't he? They call him the perfect human. I would assume he was the perfect human on the ice, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was an excellent player. He was always, like, from playing against him, and it's just kind of little things. And the way he, you know, I know when he was younger, he could just skate up the ice and beat everybody. I get that. But then as he got older, he, you know, changed his game, I guess, a little bit. Just the little things that he did. I actually ended up being pretty good buddies with Nick. I enjoyed talking to him. He's a super nice guy, like really nice, like maybe overly nice, to be honest. But no, he was like the little things he did on the ice, like just, and some definitely fans will pick up, but like as a defenseman, like watching him, like the way he would get the puck on the blue line and carry it over, like bring it, pull it across the blue line to the middle of the ice without crossing his feet over. His head was always, like that is so incredibly hard to do. His head was always up. It's like, you wonder why Nick Lidstrom never had his shot blocked. It was because he was never looking at the puck. As a forward, like when I got the puck, when I'm going to shoot it, I got to look at it. As soon as I look at it, they know I'm going to shoot it. With Nick, nobody ever knew what he was doing. And he had, like, different shots. There was, like, a knuckle puck and, like, one that he would, like, he had literally, like, different kind of, it was like golf shots, for Christ's sakes, but from the point with a hockey puck. Like, he was on a completely different level. I was fortunate enough to play, well, I got traded all the time, so I got to play with a lot of great defensemen. For me, I wouldn't want to pick, him and Scott Niedermeyer. I have a lot of respect for Scott Niedermeyer too, but Nick Lidstrom in my eyes is second to none.
The last one for me, Mike, I just need to know this. Why the hell did you not wear number 64 on every team you played on?
I know, it's another regret of mine. It's not way up there, but yeah, I was thinking, that was another thing kind of going in. I tweeted about it. It never really dawned on me until probably halfway through my career. And then when I went to Detroit, I like tweeted about it. be like, I can't even remember what I said, but something about what number I'm going to take. And then I mentioned that, and they actually got a lot of like kind of, you know, Wings fans, a lot of, I mean, Detroit's an awesome sports city, and I barely played there, and I, you know, a lot of Wings fans followed me, and I'm very appreciative for it. But they were like, yeah, 64. And then Paulie from the equipment manager said, like, yeah, 64 is available. He can wear it. The only reason why I didn't wear it was the same reason why, like, I lived right downtown Detroit as close to Joe Louis as possible. As I was like, okay, this is it for me. And at least in my eyes, and I looked, now, turning back, I wish I would have wore 64. I should have wore that fucking jersey, but I didn't. And the only reason why I didn't was I'm like, this is my last chance. You know, running around the ice, Commodore 64. I don't want to look like a party favor here, so I just stuck with 22. I wish I could change it.
Mike, great stuff, man. This was enjoyable. I think we got to the end of the mystery. I mean, in Detroit, everybody mentions Mike Commodore. Why the fuck's he at Mike Babcock? So now we know, and thanks for joining us, man. That was awesome.
Thanks a lot for having me. Anytime, fellas. I appreciate it.
Follow Mike Commodore on Twitter. It's @commie22. And again, great stuff, dude. Thanks so much.